5 years ago in Steubenville, Ohio, two high school football players were found responsible in juvenile court for the rape of a 16-year-old girl. For much of the national media, that was the end of an incendiary story. But for those in Steubenville who lived through it, the truth never caught up to the lies that had spread online and the vigilante terror that resulted. Now a new documentary reveals the danger of crowdsourcing justice to online activists filled with blind rage and with the false assumptions about a cover-up that never was. Derek John and his producing partner Anders Kelto reported a three-part series called Steubenville for Audible's new Gamebreaker series. Derek, a former OTM producer, joins us now. Hey, man.
Hey, Bob. Great to be back.
This horrendous tale all began with a high school party in Steubenville in 2012. What happened that night?
The local powerhouse football team, Big Red, has a preseason scrimmage game on a Friday night. And later that night, a lot of the players and other students are at a pretty, you know, raucous party. And a 16-year-old girl from a neighboring town just across the river, Weirton, West Virginia, is at this party. She sort of travels with a couple of these high school football players from one party to the next. She gets increasingly drunk, at some point passes out, and then the boys assault her in various ways without her consent, obviously, because she's unconscious. And then, you know, she wakes up the next day kind of having no clue what had happened.
But there were clues as to what happened because the kids responsible for this sexual violence did not keep it under wraps. They tweeted, they texted, posted an ugly image on Instagram, and other friends then uploaded a YouTube video joking about what had taken place.
I think
she is deader than Kaylee Anthony.
Steubenville is a sort of Friday Night Lights kind of town. And high school football is a very big part of the community and the culture. It did not take long for this social media stuff to be the talk of the town.
There's this, you know, infamous picture of her passed out being carried out of one of the house parties.
But among those who saw this social media traffic were the victim's own parents, who downloaded it onto a thumb drive and gave it to local law enforcement, which got busy right away, no?
So this is where the unsung hero of our story enters the stage.
From the minute we knew about it, it was around the clock.
Meaning you're literally staying up all night?
Yes.
Jane Hanlon was the county prosecutor there in Jefferson County.
We're going to hear you narrating here.
In sexual assault cases, in child abuse cases, and homicide cases, we're the only thing standing in between the victims and the people that did this.
Jane has never really talked in depth about her role in this case. It took months and months of calls from us to convince her to tell her story. It's understandable. She still feels burned by the national media and the internet mob who came after her and her family. You know, she sees all of this traffic on Twitter, and she has a son who is also at the local high school who knows a lot of the boys. He's also on the football team. Now, he was not at the party, which is a crucial detail, but she knows a lot of these boys. She knows their Twitter handle. She's kind of a bit of a helicopter mom.
I could take a look at the video and say, that's this young person, that's this young person, even some of them by name, because I knew them.
Now, the thing about criminal investigations, especially one in which the victim and the suspects are all juveniles, is that they are very much under wraps. So even though Jane Hanlon was moving very quickly on this, the outside world didn't know that at all. And they began filling in the blanks.
That's right. It just gets kind of a little notice in the local newspaper. And then very randomly, a former Steubenville resident, Alexandria Goddard, who's now living in California, she's an amateur crime blogger, happens to stumble upon this little news item.
And I was underwhelmed at how much the local news was saying about it.
And she instantly thinks, well, okay, these are two football players in this town where these guys are worshipped. They're going to get away with it. I've got to look into this. And so unbeknownst to her, of course, Jane Hanlon and local law enforcement, the detectives have basically already looked into it, found all this stuff, and have solved it. So, you know, she's up all night. She's screen grabbing these tweets, all these things that she thinks essentially she's the only one who has found.
I was furious. I was disgusted.
So Alex decides she wants to write a blog post to show her support for the victim, Jane Doe.
And I wanted to give her a voice.
Her blog becomes a kind of central clearinghouse for every rumor, bit of gossip and innuendo you could imagine around this case.
It was a kind of zeitgeist narrative because this was right on the heels of the Penn State scandal.
As Jerry Sandusky faces charges of molesting eight boys.
Shocking allegations of sexual child abuse, and a pair of university bigwigs are accused of covering it all up.
It was not for nothing, necessarily, that this blogger assumed the worst from officialdom.
Penn State came up a lot in our reporting on this as this sort of template that was already there. And this just seemed like a mini version of that. The high school football coach at Steubenville is very much a kind of Joe Paterno character, this old school Italian guy named Reno Sakac, who had been there like 35 years. The field is named after him.
We are Big Red on three. One, two, three.
We are Big Red.
Let's go.
It just seemed like, you know, the parallels were kind of irresistible.
And on the subject of zeitgeist, this was also a moment in time where this sort of loosely connected online anarchist group, Anonymous, was taking justice in its own hands.
Get as much people as you can involved. Eventually the FBI will get involved. If we try hard enough, what if this was your daughter? Would you just sit here and do nothing?
This guy who we later find out, his name is Derek Lostutter. He's this 20-something kid from Kentucky, comes from kind of a broken family, says he's also been the victim of abuse, but, you know, really into computers, kind of that prototypical hacker profile. But he links up with Alex Goddard, the blogger. In fact, she actually reaches out to him.
We had actually been emailing and tweeting to, like, Nancy Grace and others. And so that is when Get Anonymous Involved came into play, because they get involved in something and everybody is looking.
And then Derek Lostutter really ramps up the pressure.
So go out there and act like it's your daughter. Let's fight for what's right. We are Anonymous. We are Legion. We do not forgive. We do not forget. Expect us.
This anonymous threat leads to a kind of ongoing terrorism against a whole bunch of innocent parties, of whom Jane Hanlon was but one.
Yeah, I mean, they essentially out all of the personal information of every member of the football team. And, you know, again, her son is on this football team. So she actually, after the first couple of weeks when she essentially solves the case, she actually officially recuses herself because she doesn't want there to be this conflict of interest. She knows a lot of these kids involved. The case is referred to the state attorney general. And so she's off the case for months before Anonymous even gets involved.
Hey, Jane. My name's Scott. I'm calling from Florida. I raped a couple girls in Ohio, and I heard that you're the one to go to get me off the charges. So, I just, give me a call back if you could. Like I said, I know your son, and I know he likes to rape girls too, and his buddies. So I figured, you know, you could help me out with that, since I hear you're helping a lot of people out. You fucking bitch.
There's a bomb threat at one of the local elementary schools. There's all these reports of mysterious goings-on in the night, people in these Guy Fawkes masks knocking on doors, running around. It's a very scary thing, and especially for a town like Steubenville, pretty small rural town, and it's suddenly like the world just descended on their town, and they're seeing all these scary tweets and social media posts, and they don't really know what to believe. And it all feels very real and scary to them.
Once again, because of Penn State and because of other very nearly contemporaneous incidents involving athletes at Duke and elsewhere, the narrative was pretty fetching. It was easy to assume the worst of the authorities and of the community and of the school district and of everybody else who seemed to be protecting a bunch of high school football players because they were a protected class. But apart from being based on a false assumption, this actually put at risk, did it not, the very investigation that the authorities were undertaking most diligently?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest ironies of the case that we stumbled on is they saw themselves as, well, we have to do this. We have to bring attention to it. Otherwise, it will get swept under the rug. Otherwise, it will go away. But in doing that, you have these eyewitness bystander accounts from high school kids, and they're just getting pilloried. They're getting threatened online, and it actually starts to jeopardize the case that the state attorney general had built up to that point.
Now, the lessons of this episode are pretty obvious. Beware vigilante justice. Beware investing too much faith in internet chatter, which certainly applies to the public, which seemed very eager to embrace this narrative of official cover-up. But the mainstream media didn't bathe themselves in glory either, did they?
This was one of those cases because of the terrible graphic imagery, the video, all the social media posts. It was like catnip to a lot of media outlets. And while most of them, for the most part, reported the facts straight, you know, looking back in hindsight, a lot of the coverage feels sort of shaded to kind of, again, assume the worst, that this football crazy town and this faded steel city, there is a kind of very subtle bias that just assumes that this stuff is probably true. Again, the people who really knew what was going on, the local authorities like Jane Hanlon, because she was suspected of being the mastermind of this cover-up, she sort of never really has a chance to defend herself. So it was just this sort of like perfect storm where these rumors just continue to swirl and just were never properly debunked.
If you ask people about Steubenville, is there a sense now in the general public that the vigilantes were on the wrong track all along?
I think the lasting impression was that there was some sort of small town cover up to protect the football team. And yes, these boys may have ultimately been found guilty or, you know, at least held responsible in the juvenile system. That if it hadn't been for the internet vigilantes and the folks with Anonymous, that they probably would have gotten away with it. I think that's still the kind of vague impression 5 years later. If you Google Jane Hanlon, one of the top results even to this day is a petition to disbar her.
Now, all of this internet hysteria, which did so much damage, began with Alexandria Goddard, who herself was a victim of sexual assault, who felt she knew the Steubenville community pretty well, and was righteous in her efforts to get to the bottom of things, but she got to a false bottom. How does she feel looking back at the terror that she unleashed?
So she has a lot of regret, actually. She says that she rued the day she ever got in touch with Derek Lostutter, the guy with Anonymous. I mean, hacking is a federal crime. And in fact, Derek Lostutter eventually is charged and is currently serving 3 years in prison. He's banned from the internet for another 5 years. And I think she really thought she was doing the right thing. But there just came a point where it was really probably doing more harm than good. And I think she recognizes that now. But it's worth saying, Bob, within this maelstrom of misinformation, there was a real kind of genuinely authentic and pretty amazing coming together and empowerment of rape survivors. There was this large rally in town, a lot of people wearing the Guy Fawkes masks. But at some point in the middle of that, there's this beautiful little scene where these women start taking off their masks and they get up in front of the microphone and tell their story. And it seems like not that surprising now in this sort of Me Too moment. But I think then it was a really big deal, especially in a place like Steubenville.
My name is Haley, and at the age of 14, I was raped by a star football player that I had a crush on. I thought he was so nice and the greatest thing in the world. And then he has to speak to me in a back room. And I passed out. And I woke up to him in front of me. And I decided it's charges because it took place at my friend's house and I didn't want to get my friends in trouble. And those friends didn't believe me. They thought that
and at that point, it went from being a protest to being a support group.
In the most bitter irony, the prosecutor who actually solved the case, Jane Hanlon, this is the one who ends up having to, you know, move out of state on the eve of the trial because of yet another death threat.
Derek, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Bob. Thank you so much.
Derek John is a radio producer based in Chicago. His latest work with his colleague Anders Kelto is a three-part series on Steubenville, part of Audible's Game Breaker series.